Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and this is Ready to be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not, but my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. In this episode, I speak to actor and mother, Caroline Moorhen.
I read so much, so it was really comforting to know that you can blame everything on the amygdala or the reptilian brain or whatever, however you want to define it. Because I was like, am I insane? Like, the level, that trap door that opens inside your head and your heart, where you're looking at things and the threat of things and the anxiety and all of that, plus the flip side, the depth of love and of wanting to, like, that primordial desire to protect and nurture and all of that, like, absolute. And also because then it was COVID, I was pretty much in a bear cave.
Yeah,
with my cubs, like some prehistoric woman. That's how I changed, Sheila. So, like, heels went out the window and getting my hair done went out the window and leaking everywhere was the new black.
Caroline lives in LA with her husband Dahi, or Doc as he's better known as, and their two kids, Rowan who's three and Ava who's two. And last month when she was back in Dublin, we sat down and spoke about her path to motherhood, being a mom, her career to date, her love of acting, the sage advice given to her by her own mother, and how baby brain is real. Here it is. We finally made this happen. I've wanted to talk to you for so long. At the end of all the messages I was sending, I was like, she is going to hate me.
Not at all. Not at all. It's just mental. Well, as you well know, just trying to carve out time, because now it's not about me anymore. I have to kind of get my little satellites around the little ones and all of that. So I'm delighted to finally get to chat with you.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And I mean, I suppose the thing is, we could have done it remotely, but I really wanted to do the face-to-face chat. And I know that means that you have to actually be in Dublin. So life for you right now, you seem extremely fulfilled. You seem really happy.
I am. Yeah, I am. Things have changed so many ways. So many unexpected things have happened. And I do feel very happy and very contented. And I'm really enjoying the moments right now. And I think really central to that is having, becoming a mom and having two little people that just cause you to have to be present.
Yeah.
Because I mean, the one thing everyone says to you, goes very fast. Ah, Jesus, it goes very fast. And it's true.
Yeah.
Like, you know, longest days, shortest years. There are so many comments that are bandied about, but they're all true. And I really do want to be able to look around and enjoy what's happening right now. And yeah, that, like, all of the books and all of the fridge magnets are like, you know, be present. And there's a reason that people say that, because you do feel a lot less stressed when you, you plug into what's happening right now.
So yeah.
I'm enjoying that.
Yes. And that is, I mean, that's what it's all about, isn't it? Because we can be juggling so much of the time.
Oh, big time. Well, I mean, I was terrified of being a mother for the longest time. Like, it wasn't I was rushing towards at all. Absolutely. Yeah. I was kind of going, oh my God, like 24/7, somebody else is the focus. And like, I just was like, how do people do this? How do they manage? But I suppose I had different priorities then, for one thing. But like, when people would get married before they were 30, I would be looking at them going, are you insane? Yeah, I had a real hesitancy with that kind of thing. Just that level of responsibility, and also feeling like you're hanging up your boots or your gloves or whatever metaphor you want to put on it, for a period. Because for me, I'm all in. I've done a few things here and there, but very much my focus at the moment is them. And so years ago, when people are of childbearing age in the typical sense, they go straight for that. And I was like, God, no, I was just absolutely terrified. I feel like I had a bit of an arrested development. Like other people, other women are very much maternal and they're like, I can't wait to meet somebody and have babies. And I was just like, who are these people? I could not identify with them at all. And
so the relationship bit you were happy with, just the babies bit, not so much.
Well, I always figured I would be a parent. I just didn't know when that was going to happen or wanted to happen. I can remember my husband and I were kind of going, oh, I'm sort of 38 now. We should probably be thinking about this. And I was like, yeah. But we were kind of on the same page.
Okay, well, that's good.
We loved our life and it was just sort of something that we wanted to have done, but it never felt like the right time. So then when I found myself pregnant, then I suddenly went, oh, I do want this. And then something changed. Biology kicked in and we were ready, but then it wasn't meant to be for me. So like you, I went through a miscarriage and then I had another miscarriage, and then it became like a crazy focus for me that I just really wanted us to have a family.
Yeah.
And so I immersed myself into trying to make that happen, and then also trying to get to a place where I was okay if it didn't happen.
A lot of people listening will relate to what you're saying. It is all consuming.
Yeah.
When you want something so badly. And you don't, you're trying to stay positive, but then you're faced with perhaps disappointment or it just something not happening or whatever it might be.
But also,
it's hard to think about anything else.
Yeah. And it's also the shock of, like, I've had a very lucky life and I feel very lucky in my life, and things, I generally have an idea about something and then I go and see how I can make that something happen, or that's how it was. And then suddenly I felt like my body was letting me down, and it was like, oh, I always thought this was going to happen, and now I'm being told by every doctor I see, like, not to bother, even with IVF. You know, they're like, the first round of IVF I did, the doctor pretty much said, you're barren. And I was like, I'll stop you there. Like, when he saw that I was having like a borderline heart attack in the surgery. And then he saw the colour I went, and I was like, is this his first day in the job? Like, how would you say that to somebody? And then he kind of backtracked and went, oh, well, each month can be different. You can have a different reaction a different month. I was like, open with that.
Yeah, of course.
You know,
as you said, why would you start with that? Words have such power, don't they?
Absolutely. Particularly the ones you say to yourself.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not a confrontational person, but I really, like, he saw my face and I don't think I actually said open with that because I was in such shock. But after the whole thing settled down, I was really angry. Like, it's different if someone's giving you really bad news and you have to deal with bad news and they're not going to sugarcoat it, that's fine. But if there is hope or if things can be improved upon, it's nice to tell someone that.
Of course.
Because it's such a stressful process, and I do really feel like the stress part you know, that raises up the cortisol and all of that.
Yeah, of course.
You know, so...
I'm imagining you in a kind of a pretty woman moment going back with your two beautiful babies. Big mistake.
Well,
huge.
So funny, because actually I was about to do a third round of IVF. So that first round was a complete, you know, unmitigated failure, like as in no eggs harvested, waste of time, all okay. The rest. Then the second round, I went absolutely mental. Between round one and round two, I went to a kinesiologist, changed my diet, cut out so many things, threw so many other things into the mix. Like I'd always been kind of doing, you know, acupuncture and Chinese herbs and things to sort of prepare the uterus. And then when I got that bad result, I just went, I went deep diving. I was reading studies translated in different languages about my particular age, my particular, you know, what they had discovered. And I was off-roading it myself, like doing my own vitamin combinations. Were you? And like absolutely like a
Dr.
lunatic.
Moran. Okay.
I was like, come on, like if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it, you know?
Yeah.
Then I went back and we had two, like grade one or whatever they call it, embryos.
Wow. Okay.
But they didn't implant, so that was disappointing. And then we were going back for the third round and they looked at the scans and only one follicle had started to get bigger and they were like, well, let's not bother with this round because there's only one egg responding and it doesn't look good to us. And I was like, what are you talking about? It doesn't look good to you. They were like, it's so big. We think it's not good. So I rang a different doctor in Dublin and they were like, what are they talking about? You know, like an egg can be that size without stimulation in a normal cycle, without anything. Yeah. So I don't know what they're talking about. So what I ended up doing was ringing my husband and going, like, we're cancelling this IVF because it's kind of pointless to put so much into this one. You know, it's literally putting all your eggs in one basket. So we went au naturel and that is Rowan.
Wow, there you go.
Yeah, yeah. I did a trigger shot myself. So they were like, take these, do that, whatever. And I went, listen, do you know what? I'm just gonna take this from here myself. And I didn't take any more of the stimulation. And I said, I'm going to trigger this ovulation myself. I looked, set the clock, and I was like, we're gonna get busy in whatever it was, 36, 48 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was that.
Did you have a feeling that this was going to be your time? Like, as in, you know, what was your self-talk like at this stage?
Oh, no, I didn't have that feeling at all. It was just like, we'll go back to the drawing board was my feeling. But, you know, like I'm not going to waste money on a cycle now with this news, but equally nature plays a role in this. And then, I went to a different clinic. I was done with because they were so insensitive how they handled the whole thing and even how they delivered that message and couldn't get people on the phone. I mean, it was awful. So I went to another clinic thereafter and the pregnancy didn't show up when we arrived to have our first consult and the doctor was like, you've a less than 15% chance of this ever happening for you. You know, how do you feel about those odds? And I was just like, I'm going to stop you there. Please don't start with that. Let's just see.
Yeah.
And then, and she said, okay, we're going to try a different approach. And then I went back in a few weeks later and she did the ultrasound to check and see where we were. And I just saw one dark patch on the screen and I was like, oh Jesus, here we go. It's only one egg and oh, nightmare, you know, it's like where other people have so many more chances. And then she said, that's not a follicle, that's an embryo. And I just went, what are you talking about? She goes, you're pregnant. And I just looked at Doc and I was like, is she practicing for what she's going to say yeah. when we're pregnant? And then she just said it again, you're pregnant. And I just went, oh my God. And then I held my breath for 5 months basically until I felt like I was in a safer place. But it was amazing.
That is amazing. Especially when you were told to hang up your boots, really.
Totally. And we were already talking about egg donation and I have a friend who's just had a beautiful little girl with a donor egg. I have another friend who's due. She might be in labor right now. Mm. You know what I mean? And it's a wonderful option. And we were ready for that because we wanted to be parents.
Yeah.
So we were, you know, we were ready for that. And I think that's wonderful. And it's so miraculous. And I've two friends who've had babies by surrogacy.
Yes.
So there are amazing other avenues. So, I had been told to hang up my boots and, you know, would have gotten to a point where we would have said, okay, this isn't working for us and let's change our focus. But we weren't at that point yet.
Yeah.
And I just had one medical professional who was my acupuncturist in LA, and she was like, you know, you're going to be pregnant within a year, naturally. And she was actually right. But everyone else was like, it's never going to happen for you. Like, so move on.
And what did Dohi think at this? What was his feeling on the whole thing? Did he think it was going to happen for you?
We would oscillate, you know, good cop, bad cop between each other and trying to buoy each other up and then be pragmatic. And he was amazing through the whole process. So patient and just so supportive and in there with all of it, you know. And I had an easier time than I think a lot of people. Like, I know some people just absolutely lose their minds with all the hormones and everything. I think we were okay through it.
Mm.
But he's a very sage person. Like, he can stand back and take stock of things and think calmly rather than getting, like, I would definitely be the over-emotional, borderline hysterical at times. So he kept us on a steady course throughout. But he was like, whatever we need to do, we'll do.
Mm.
And then when we've done all we can do, then we'll step back. So we were both, we're not going to go under. Like, we're a good team ourselves.
Yes.
Yeah. And this is something that will be adding to us, but we're not trying to fix anything or fill a void between us.
Yeah.
So that was a great
headspace
to be in.
Yeah, because am I right in thinking you would have been together about 12, 13 years before you became parents-ish?
We met, God, here's the maths now, Jesus. We met when I was 30 and my first miscarriage was, I was 39 actually when I had my first miscarriage.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was 9 years we were together
when
we first got pregnant.
And then parents at?
I think I was 41.
Yeah.
Like, what age am I now?
Jeez. I know. I have to ask myself the same question.
Cool. And the shock, by the way, of realizing that I'm 45. I mean, I need to check my own ID because there's definitely something went wrong there. Because actually, guys, I'm 27, you guys. Yeah, I'm 27.
Well, you look amazed. You always do. You always do.
Stop.
Becoming a mother. How, I mean, look, you can't ask this question to anyone and they'll say, sure, I didn't change at all. But how did you, we know we all change, but how do you think you've changed most since becoming a mother?
Do you know, how did I change? Well, first of all, what goes on with your brain, you know, when you're pregnant and in the months after, and then even still now, like, I read so much that was really comforting to know that you can blame everything on the amygdala or the reptilian brain or whatever, however you want to define it. Because I was like, am I insane? Like, the level, that trap door that opens inside your head and your heart where you're looking at things and the threat of things and the anxiety and all of that, plus the flip side, the depth of love and of wanting to, like, that primordial desire to protect and nurture and all of that, like, absolute. And also because then it was COVID, I was pretty much in a bear cave with my cubs, like some prehistoric woman. That's how I changed, Sheila. So, like, heels went out the window and getting my hair done went out the window and leaking everywhere was the new black. So,
That must have been, in its own strange way. I mean, I know at the time you probably didn't think it was a blessing, but because there were a lot of negatives that came with the restrictions during the pandemic, the height of it. But also there was an element of, we can just stay in our little nest.
It was idyllic, really, for us. It was idyllic because Rowan was just 6 months old or thereabouts when the pandemic struck.
Right.
And my mom happened to be visiting from Dublin. So she was in LA, and then she was coming for 3 weeks and she stayed for 4 months.
Okay.
So that was magical. Yeah. So I had to jump a few hoops there to get her ESTA extended, because they generally don't do that.
Yeah.
So we got all of that organized and she stayed. So she was there for such a wonderful time. And then also she was there when we found out I was pregnant again.
Oh, lovely.
So that was incredible to be able to share that with her live in person.
Yeah, because
they're amazing.
Yeah.
They're close. Yeah.
They're so close in age. I mean, you absolute legend. Because having two myself now, and it wasn't planned to have the age gap that we have, as you know, we had two miscarriages in between. But I now have a newfound respect for everyone I know whose kids are closer in age, because it's full on enough for us right now with a 5-year-old and a 1-year-old. But when they're that close and you still have a baba or a toddler running around and you're trying to mind him, her, and then another.
I think there are advantages and disadvantages to both.
Sure.
I think it worked out beautifully for us because we're sort of just in the trenches,
yeah,
with the pair of them, and they're thick as thieves.
Yeah.
And I was in the zone, and it was COVID.
Yeah.
Like, there was not a lot going on. You know, I wasn't there knocking out a novel.
Yeah.
So I may as well knock out a baby. yeah, because I, like, it was such a demanding thing.
Mm.
And a friend of mine just had a baby there, and I went to visit him and his partner, and I was looking at them. I was like, oh my God, like, you look so well rested. What is happening? Because for us, it was like we were hit with a tornado.
Yeah.
We were banjaxed and just all over the shop and kind of not even remembering to eat, and then being like collapsing, and you're going, it's one tiny baby, you know. But it was very, very full on for us in the beginning with Rowan. Also, when he was born, he was great and in perfect health, but the breastfeeding thing was a bit complicated in the beginning, and he dropped more weight than the doctors were happy with. So then we were on absolute high alert, measuring everything and, you know, weighing him all the time and writing down every time I breastfed. And I know, like, new parents do that a lot, but eventually got to a point where we're kind of looking at each other going, we can stop journaling every ounce of, you know.
Yeah.
Poor Shane having to listen to
this. He's well used to it. We have recorded.
God, love him.
I mean, like, really, we did a whole series on pregnancy.
Yeah.
He's heard it all.
Okay.
Lower than this, though,
right? Yeah. Do you have any children?
I don't.
Are you sworn off? Christ. Yeah.
Oh.
So it was idyllic because Rowan was tiny, and then we discovered that I was with child again.
Yes.
So we could just be in this lovely cocoon. And also, it was wonderful timing because Rowan had been born pre-COVID, so I knew what to expect. So I pretty much labored at home.
Lovely.
And then just arrived at the hospital when she was ready to debut, basically.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't have had that confidence had Rowan arrived in COVID. So it all, that timed out really beautifully. It was really kind of, the whole thing was quite blessed in the timing of it all.
Great. Let's talk about making the decision to leave Ireland. So just, you know, I know so many people listening would have, you know, watched you on TV and known what like a big noise you were in Irish TV when you decided to leave the country. So you started off, am I right, bit acting, bit of Fair City, and then the Selection Box, a reality TV show, to choose a new presenter was your launch pad into TV presenting.
Absolutely. Like, Fair City was really like transition year for me.
Right.
You know, it was quite literally at that age, before transition year had actually come in.
Yeah.
It started coming in after. I'm aging myself now. That's good. But I had been in drama school. I was in the Betty Ann Norton Theatre School and absolutely loved it. But I never looked on it as something, as a full-time career. And it's interesting looking back because we did do auditions and stuff as part of the you know, being in that school, people would approach Betty Ann for people, for commercials, for films, for whatever. And I actually didn't realize that. My mom told me this was on, when I was an adult. In fact, on the eve of the last audition for the selection box, where I was getting major cold feet because my experience in Fair City in terms of being recognized was really, really negative. It was horrible.
Oh,
I didn't enjoy it at all.
Okay.
I didn't like people sort of looking at me, or, I mean, I was 15. So
yeah,
you're at
the height of
all of that self-consciousness and you don't know who you are, what's going on. And people of all ages are making comments and, you know, inappropriate male comments and then nasty. It was sort of like what goes on now in social media was happening out car windows like bars, dare I say, that I was in at that age. People saying things, and I did not like it at all. So when the opportunity with the selection box came around, and I was like down to the last five at this point, and or three or whatever they broke it down, and it was getting to the end, and I was like, I don't know if I really want to do this. And my mom was sort of saying, well, you know who you are now, and you know what you want to be and say, and you're not going to be a leaf in the wind based on the opinion of others, you know, good or bad. What they say will not change who you were before they said it, and after they've said it, you remain the same person. And that was something that I didn't have any of that when I was 15.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, you're right. And I'm really interested in television presenting. And I had done it once before, briefly on a pilot, and loved it, just been so energized by it that I was like, yeah, actually I do really want to do this. So I did it. But then she also told me that at that time when I was little, when I was in drama school and going for those auditions, there were some that I got for films that, you know, would have moved the needle in terms of my career. But she didn't think it was right for me to be on a set or working professionally at that age.
Okay.
But she let me do the Fair City thing because it was only supposed to be one scene, a one-off, but it ended up getting written in. And then she actually gave me the choice.
Yeah. How did you feel when you found that out?
All kinds of feelings. I was really proud of her, actually, first of all, for just having that conviction, you know. But I remember when I was that age and not getting things, or like being in callbacks and then hearing nothing. And I remember going, God, Jodie Foster had already done this by this age or whatever. You know
okay,
what I mean?
Yeah, okay.
And also a lot of my friends in my acting class and in my group, a huge portion of them went on to be professional actors, and a lot of them were working at that age doing big films with Jim Sheridan, international stuff, radio plays all the time, theatre, a lot of big things. And I definitely had that.
What if?
Not the what if, but just, oh, you know, I'm not achieving enough now as an 11-year-old or whatever.
Oh,
you know
God,
what I mean?
Right.
So my mom wouldn't have been aware of that, actually.
Okay.
She wouldn't have known at that time that I was going, oh, you know.
Because she sounds incredibly wise, you know, and what, like, the advice she gave you when you were going for the selection box is like the best advice a mother can give a daughter. It's to just, you know, own who they are.
Or any human.
Or anyone, exactly. Or anyone.
Particularly in this day and age and climate where people are living externally and getting dopamine hits from people doing a thumbs up on something that they don't even know.
Yeah.
Like being that vulnerable to other people's opinion. It's just so dangerous. It really is. And, you know, that was a really important lesson. And it's one I needed to remind myself of, you know, moving to LA, as you say, like having been sort of a minor big deal in the Irish context to going
you weren't
somewhere
a minor
where,
big deal,
you know, no one knows you.
But it was that thing of big fish, small pond. And then you were going to LA where you were, I suppose, let's be honest, a small fish in a very big pond.
Or fish food, one might say.
But like, you know, and that's leaving that cozy, toasty, you know, your cover magazines, all the papers want you. You're wanted and then you say, no, I'm gonna leave. Is it true that you guys were only together? You weren't even a year together when you made the move.
No, we had met in September and we went to LA for a long weekend, actually, in March.
Right.
And that was the trigger.
Right, okay, for both of you.
Yes. Like, Doc is really flexible and open to new experiences and had lived in multiple countries before we met, and he'd actually only recently come back to Ireland. So I'm sure his parents weren't too impressed with me taking him off again. But we went over to LA. It was just for a few days. And I was at a crossroads in my life. Right before I met him, I was thinking of like moving to Paris to write, you know, I didn't do French in school. I always wanted to learn French and I always wanted to live in Paris at that
point. Caroline in Paris?
Yeah. And I was like, I'm just going to do that. Mm. And then I met him and then I had an acting opportunity in Ireland that came out of nowhere that just fired me up. And I was like, oh God, that's what I want to do. I don't want to be in Paris writing. I want to be acting. And because I just didn't know what I wanted. I didn't know what I wanted. It was the same when I left college. I was like, I wrote on a piece of paper the things I was interested in, and journalism was on that piece of paper, and television presenting was on that piece of paper, and a few other things. And I tried to get into television. Like, I put some sort of a showreel into RTE and had some meetings in TV3, which was in its infancy, and they were like, we have everyone we need, thanks. And I was a bit, when I think about it, probably a bit arrogant in that I wasn't going to go the I'll make coffee route.
Yeah.
You know, okay. I was like, I have a skill set.
Yeah.
You know, surely there's somewhere kind of thing.
Good on
and
you.
And there wasn't. And maybe good on me in that it did work out. But
this was pre the selection box.
Yeah.
So you were what? Early 20s?
Yeah. When did I leave college? Yeah, I would have been. Yeah. 20.
You're like, good luck to
21.
Doing errands.
Well, I had done work experience in other places in public relations companies.
Okay.
And
yeah. You served your time.
Well, I mean,
you felt your head.
I kind of was like, I know how this will go.
Yeah.
And like in my 20-year-old brain, I was like, yeah, you make coffee and then you keep on making coffee.
Yeah, okay.
You
okay,
know,
okay.
Well, you might get it. You might sort of go into, you'll move in as a researcher or a production or whatever, but I didn't think I'd get front of house that route.
Mm.
I wanted to be on camera. I wanted to be on camera talent. That's what I wanted.
Well, I mean, they speak about star power and they speak about, you know, the X factor and all these different terms. And it's an undefinable something. And like, I'm not just saying it because you're sitting in front of me, but I've always felt about you. And hello, I think anyone who ever meets you feels it about you. Some people have a vibe, an aura, whatever you want to call it.
Compliments corner.
But it's true. It's true. It gives them gravitas. It gives them an energy, a something. And you have it. Like, oh my God. Hello, do you have it? And this is why you did. But you do. And this is why I suppose you were as popular as you were on Irish TV. I mean, Off the Rails was probably the biggest gig and the one that we kind of remember you most from. How many years did you do that for?
We did that for 6 years, actually.
Yeah.
Which, you know, was quite long in the scheme of things for some shows. You know, others go on and on and on. But in that, I started to see, you know, when you're that age, you're not looking at certain bigger picture things, but for sure they would swap out presenters on shows like that and swap out the name of the show.
Mm.
And it kind of always seemed to be like a 2-year stint, you know, but I wasn't thinking of that at that time. I was just really enjoying it and having a great time. And it was an amazing gig to get because it was sort of like a culmination of so many different things because I already had my fashion column in the Herald. So basically, like Off the Rails was like a three-dimensional version of what I was already doing.
Mm.
And the reach of it was huge. So it was so rewarding because I got to, like, I would do makeovers in the paper and we'd do like a still shoot and I'd bring people out and get them kitted up and all the rest. So to actually have a whole team behind me doing that was just magical. And I loved it. I put my heart and soul into it. But before deciding to move to LA, like that final year, my heart wasn't in it anymore. I kind of felt like it was getting repetitive and it was stagnating and plateauing or whatever word you want to put on it. And I was like, I need to change. This needs to change. And I just didn't know what the next move would be. Like I was very lucky with, and again, there was a lot of arrogance there because I said probably no to more things than I said yes to during my those years in Ireland in terms of TV stuff. Like I was selective about the things I wanted to do. And
good on you. Because because you know it's not that easy to say no to things and be that like comfortable in yourself to say, oh, I'm not feeling that. You know, especially when you're going from gig to gig.
Absolutely. Corner. I could see some crews that were absolutely wrecked because they just, you'd see lads going, well, I don't know where the next thing coming from. And I'm like, well, when are you going to actually live? Because your shoulders in bits carrying that camera, you need to take a break, you know. But, and well, that's the thing. I didn't have a family that I needed to provide for.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't have those pressures. Mm. You know, I was lucky I had an apartment I was able to pay for and all of that. That was amazing, but I didn't have those pressures. I think things change, your priorities change.
Yeah.
And when you've children, for sure, absolutely. Think, you know, once again, that it's not about you anymore. I think you would have a very different outlook then. But at that time in my 20s, I didn't have those pressures.
Sure.
So I would say no to projects that I didn't think would, like I thought could potentially do me damage to be associated with them or whatever. I remember one time, oh God, this is triggering something. I kept saying no to this project that where it was like a program about young teenagers who like wanted to be famous and wanted to be in the media or whatever. And this program was grooming them for that. And I kept on saying, no, I think this is a really bad idea. I think that this is a vulnerable age for teenagers and they'll go back into school the day after this airs and get absolutely slated. And I don't want to have anything to do with it. And it kept coming back around. And then eventually the producers, because Olivia, my sister, managed all my TV career, they were like, oh, Olivia, for God's sake, we're trying to get her on Jason Byrne's Anonymous show. It's not this program at all, but we're trying, will you just get her on the show? They had invented this whole program.
Yeah.
So then Olivia was like, oh, I think you should do this, you know, just enough for me to get like stitched up or whatever. Yeah, it was absolutely hilarious. Yeah. And Pam was was in the prosthetics. But like that, you know, I was like, I don't want to do a program like that, that sort of celebrity kind of tacky, you know. So it turned out not to be that. And I was made a holy show.
They were like, can she just park her integrity, please? And just do the gig. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, at that time it was, you know, you can make those decisions when you're free and you don't have things pulling at you.
But it strikes me that you're still that person that has a good sense of if you want to do something, you'll do it. If you don't, you won't.
Definitely. I think that's in there. But at the moment, I'm in such a different space. Like, I just, honestly, I did a play during the summer and I was like, wow, I can remember lines. Like, I was going, is my head like, has the grey matter left the building? Like, because I've just been in such a space of being at home with children and doing the odd bit and piece there. But like, you know, like I just was looking in the mirror one day in the midst of all of that going, God, I am the woman I did makeovers on years ago.
Stop.
Where you'd go, Jesus, how could she leave the house like that? Have you no self-respect? I'm like, yeah, that's me. That's me. Like, honestly, particularly during COVID, you're going, I don't think my calf muscles could cope with a heel now.
I know.
Think they would snap.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm in them today for you, Sheila.
Oh, you are. Well done, you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Well, I'm home in Dublin now and it's so much more dressy than LA.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's so funny. I would not see it again. It's probably my own ignorance. I wouldn't have known that. Wouldn't have thought that.
Yeah, well, like, I mean, there are red carpet things and all that sort of jazz in LA for sure. And people push the boat out. But also on that same red carpet, you'll see someone in flip-flops and, you know, jeans that look like they need a wash.
Okay. So what is your life? So life now is obviously, you know, it's the kids and the main focus. But say before the kids, what would a typical day be like when you were like, you know, it's all about the work stuff? Did you have a typical day?
I didn't have a typical day. Like, you know, it's very different. And so a lot of time would be spent in preparation for auditions. Mm. So a lot goes into, when you get good opportunities, being ready for them. And I'm hoping that one of the gifts of motherhood is that I'll have a more laissez-faire sort of attitude and kind of care less, because I think there's huge power in not wanting something to that same level where you're like, you know, putting huge amounts of energy. Like, I'll always put a lot of energy into the work itself, like preparing for something. You know, I'm not one of these people that just rocks in and I haven't learned what I'm doing, or I haven't researched the part. Like, I really, and I was like that even with Off the Rails, you know, I would write all the scripts and I would always spend a lot of time talking to people that we were going to be working with. You know, when it was like a longer form piece where you're getting to know the person and all that. And even when I did the Fame Game, that first quiz show, like, I rang every single contestant beforehand just to sort of chat to them and say, okay, like, well done for coming on the show and all this. And oh my God, the ignorance. Like, I hadn't really, the penny didn't drop that pretty much all of those contestants were people who had auditioned for the job. So not all of them were that happy to chat to me. Yeah, but just that idea of kind of walking out and going, right, I've got something bigger to think about right now than whether I'm getting that job or not. And that's a lovely feeling.
Yes, of course. I can imagine it takes a real strength of character to, you know, and I'm sure you've had your moments where you wanted a gig and it maybe didn't happen and you have to move on, dust yourself off and go on to the next thing. But it must be...
Many times.
Okay,
Sheila,
okay.
Many times.
Okay, but... And I... it'd be very easy to kind of throw in the towel and say, you know what? I'm done with this.
I love acting.
Okay.
I absolutely love it.
So are you... Is this it? So, you know, the way you said before, after college, you know, journalism, TV presenting, and you were like, tick, tick, tick. Really, you've achieved the things you said you wanted to do, but... It's always really come back to the one thing.
It hasn't always come back to the one thing. And that was something, that was a lesson as well. Like, you know, it's stupid having regrets. And I'm kind of in a period I'm sort of wintering in terms of my career at the moment. Sorry to use a real Instagram-y expression. God, someone throw her a slap. But you know what I mean? I'm
I'm in
a quieter place. I'm not go, go, go on my career. But I went to LA and I didn't know if I had what it took as an actor. And now I feel actually very in a really good place about my work and the things that I've done. I don't feel good about the things I've done, as in I feel like I should have achieved a lot more at this point. And that is...
Do you?
Absolutely, absolutely. But the things that I have done, I am proud of. And that has given me a confidence that I absolutely did not have going to LA and in the first few years, because I just didn't... I mean, I'd done so much acting when I was younger, but because I wasn't thinking of it in terms of a career, I was just enjoying it. I wasn't kind of going, are other people moved by this or not? And I suppose that's actually a really good way to be, is to not think about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I was like, am I doing this right? Is this what this is? And now I kind of feel like I have something to offer as an actor. And that was a really exciting realization for me personally. So that's something I want to keep doing. Absolutely. But also I do love writing, and also I do love TV presenting. And when I went to LA, I kind of turned my back completely on TV presenting in the American context, because foolishly I sort of thought, oh, they won't take me seriously as an actor if they think I'm a TV presenter, because I think there are attitudes like that in Ireland. Less so now.
Do you know what? That's something I did want to talk to you about. I was curious to know, like, what was the feedback? Because there did seem to be a lot of articles going, you know, she's off to become a Hollywood star. And there was a sense of, I wondered, was it a touch of cynicism coming from the media in Ireland about the decision to make that move?
Some.
Not all, thankfully.
Some, not all. It was amazing, actually, the huge tidal wave of support from all kinds of corners that came.
Good.
Like, I didn't want to tell anybody about it because I just felt so vulnerable and so exposed, and all of those things of, like, everyone waiting for me to fall on my face and all of that. And there were a couple of, actually, kind of individuals rather than publications.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That were really hatchet oriented around it. And
that's just the way some people operate.
Yeah. And do you know what? People are interesting, because I wouldn't have seen a lot of that, but some people felt the need to share things with me and were like, isn't this awful now? What's his problem? And I'm like, yeah, I didn't really need to read that. Thanks for saying. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you wonder what goes through people's heads. And I always try to be as self-aware in different situations, you know, like even what we're talking about earlier with all pregnancy and fertility, I'm always thinking of people who are going through that now. And I always try to have something that's going to support them in that time. Mm. But people sent me things and I'm going, do they think this is adding to my day? Do they think this is good for me to know? Mm. Or are they trying to get me to have a vendetta against this person? Like, you know, what's the rationale behind passing on bad news, basically?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I'm sort of the thing, if you don't have something good to say, keep your mouth shut. Mm. But a lot of the media stuff was really supportive, and individuals and, you know, even like people in the airport and mammies at the supermarket. So that was lovely.
Yeah.
But definitely people found out about it way before I was ready to tell anyone about it.
Okay.
And I had this really awkward interview on with Ryan Tuberty, where like I just didn't want to be talking about it. I was on promoting whatever I was promoting. I can't remember what it was. And they had, the researchers or whatever had found out, and they were like, so you're in LA now. And I was like, shit.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh God, the show is on now tonight and I can't, you know, so I was sort of doing this interview. And I remember my late uncle, my uncle Ronnie, I remember him kind of going, I want to talk to you about your interview. Like, you were doing a lot of M's and R's and everything, and I just want to chat to you about that. Like, so sweet, trying to help me out. And I was like, well, here's what was going on there. I didn't want to talk about any of those things. So I was going, trying to think,
yeah.
How do I divert? Because I just didn't want everyone to have their arms folded looking at me.
Yeah.
You know, but again, if I'd listened to the advice of my mother when I was 24, you know, other people's opinions don't put too much weight on it. Absolutely. Just do your own thing, keep your head down, do your work, enjoy your life.
Yeah.
Boom.
What a great role model to have, isn't she? Fantastic. You know, we always hear about it's the things you don't do that you regret, not the stuff that you do do. So you're doing the thing, I suppose.
That's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's true. It's something I wanted to do and we love it there. We love our lifestyle there. Work is way harder. I just had everything fall in my lap all the time.
Here. Yeah.
And it's not like that in LA. I've had some amazing opportunities and I've gone through a lot of personal development and growth around my work, but I'm at another point now where I have to kind of go dig deep again in terms of like, I feel like I'll be reinventing myself again when I come out of this cocoon that I'm still in, even though I'm doing bits and pieces. I'm still, until they're a little bit older, I'm very much the focus is the children.
Yeah, of course.
So then when I come out, it's like I have to kind of re-energize all of the work stuff again because it hasn't been my priority.
Yeah. But the love is still there for the craft.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
absolutely.
You see yourself staying with acting.
Yeah. Well, there's a project that I'm going to be hosting when I go back to LA and that'll be the first presenting thing I've done for quite a while. So I'm looking forward to that. But I don't have things mapped out at all.
Mm.
But definitely, yeah. Like I did a play during the summer in Smock Alley and then we were over in Tala and it was just such a joy to be back standing behind the flats waiting to go on. I mean, the flats on a theatre stage, I wasn't in Ballymun at the time. And just that, there's just something very special, the electricity of a live audience, particularly. Like, I love all kinds of acting. I love film, television, and theatre, but there's something particularly special about theatre for me.
Yeah.
So definitely, yeah, the craft will be part of the next phase.
Yes. Are you guys going to, I mean, I know you're probably asked a lot, but, and it's, at the end of the day, it's a personal family decision, but you're back here, back home. I mean, I know home is LA now. Or where is home? I mean, are you torn?
I am a bit torn. LA is home.
Yeah, okay.
But absolutely, since the little ones have arrived and since COVID restrictions lifted, we have started kind of coming back for longer vacations here. And a bit more immersive rather than suitcase at the end of the bed that never gets put away. So like Rowan, our little one who's three now, is in a play school for a couple of hours a day here with a moon chore and all of that.
Great,
and my God, when I went to view it the first time, I just burst into tears when the teacher was like, and into the Lena. I was like, Lena, oh my God. And also, like, when I went viewing schools in LA, I viewed one place and they had Ashlyn copybooks and I was immediately, like, right-angle tears into the woman's face. And I was like, I'm really sorry about this. I may be premenstrual. I'm not sure what's happening. But the woman who founded the school was Irish.
Oh, lovely.
And she was long retired.
Right, okay.
But they still had the Ashlyn copybooks and I was in ribbons. So, yeah, how... I love where we live and I love our lifestyle and the way things are in terms of like, because you asked me before when I went on a major tangent of like, what's a typical day like, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So before becoming a parent, you know, you're prepping for auditions, you're in class, you're doing projects, like, you know, hopefully you're getting paid decent money for a nice gig or else you're doing, like actually I was doing still a lot of stuff back and forth in Ireland, and then some really juicy TV projects in LA. And then I started up a theatre company in LA, which I'm part of and I love. And we do amazing, well, to me it's amazing because I love very intimate, like where you've nowhere to hide, like either you're, people are moved by the story or they're asleep in your face, kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so you have to be on, you have to be
absolutely
delivering or else you, you know, you don't have the luxury of hiding behind big sets.
Yeah,
so we do
immersive
theatre, like where we'll have an audience of like 40 people for in a site-specific venue. Like say we did a gorgeous one a few years ago in the house that Polanski used in Chinatown, which is in a old part of Los Angeles. So we had our audience follow us. I love all that. So that's kind of passion project stuff on the side.
Very cool.
So I love all the things I'm involved in LA, but I definitely do miss Irishness.
Right. Because, I mean, that's the thing about you as well. Like, your accent hasn't changed a bit. Not a bit.
I do say awesome the odd time, and I hate myself
but you,
for it.
Okay, but you still say it with an Irish accent, though.
Well, yes. No, I definitely hold on to my Irish accent. Sometimes the kind of the rhythm or the patina can kind of start layering on of California.
Right.
But Olivia, my sister, would be very quick
to
be like, you just said gas for petrol.
Oh, right. Okay.
So things like that. And I will say diaper the odd time or whatever.
Oh, right.
But I mean, my husband's Irish and we're on FaceTime a lot.
Yeah.
And then now we're getting these long stays at home for as long as it suits. Like I can't.
But your kids are obviously speaking in Californian accents.
No.
Are they not?
Not really, no.
Are they not? Interesting.
Actually, some people think Rowan has an English accent.
Okay.
I think it's because he enunciates so well.
Okay.
And we've got friends from different places.
Okay.
So everyone's American in school with a few, there's a bit of a mix. But like we've got friends from Canada, England, there's like East European few people. I'm just trying to think of all the different influences of his voice. But you know what? There's more American accents here because of kids watching TikTok. And
yeah, it's very, very good
YouTube.
Point. Very good point. When you, or if you retire, so we're talking like 20 years time kind of stuff, 30, whatever. Where do you see yourself being? Staying in LA or somewhere else or here?
I find that really hard.
I know it is.
No, even
well,
like,
I mean, it's
5 years
the future.
From now.
Yeah.
Because if I look back on my life, everything was exactly the way I wanted it and then it wasn't and then a change had to happen.
Mm.
And so, but now any changes going forward, they have to work for Doc. They have to work for our children. So we're all really happy now and with the balance of. So I think the goal would be to have an anchor here and there.
Yeah.
Doc is more worldly, open, could be anywhere, you know.
Yeah, as long as you're together.
Absolutely. Mm. But it's really hard for me to, I'm not good at planning.
Yeah.
You know, but it's, the mix is working for us now.
Yeah.
And then when the intensity of what's going on right now with parenting, when that gets a little bit less, I'd love to do more work here as well as in LA.
Yeah.
Because I feel like something's just changing now with that. I'm still breastfeeding though, so that's kind of busy.
Yeah, sure. And I suppose they are still at such an age where, you know, 3 going on 4 and then just a 2-year-old, just turned two
the other day. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're busy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it though. You know, so many people, I've heard so many people in the park and stuff go like, oh my God, I hate the baby phase. And I get it. God, they're hanging out of you.
Yeah.
But you know what? I actually love it.
Yeah, I know. It can be hell, but it's also bliss. It's a mad mix of this is very hard. I get that. You said something earlier and I was like, oh God, I know that feeling very well. Anyone listening, whether you have your own kids or you mind kids, but if you are in contact with kids, particularly small, small ones, and especially babies who can't communicate, it's when you're trying to do stuff and you're trying to juggle and manage, and then you have a baby crying and you want to go to them because that's your instinct, mm-hmm. but you can't because you're in the middle of doing mm-hmm. something, and they don't understand and you can't. I get this absolute knot, knot in my stomach.
I know. I've never known anxiety
Same.
And a friend of mine, an actress friend of mine, who's hugely successful, on major shows all the time, one or two on the call sheet, and has a team of people around her always for everything. And she sends me these hilarious little memes of mother's guilt. Yeah. And there's nothing like it. Because never get it right.
No.
If you've got a career or you want a career or you feel like you're missing out on that and then you're taking your time away from your children, and then if you're not with your children 100%, and it's never ending.
Yeah.
I think I've been really lucky in that I have kind of given myself a bit of a break in that I'm gone, it's okay that you're not doing that now.
Mm.
I've kind of said, that's all right. And I've put a bit of a pause on the inner monologue of, you need to be doing more, you need to be this, you need to be that, just to enjoy things a bit. But that new mom stress where everything is a hazard and a worry and a concern, you're going, I could trip down the stairs and kill us both. All these utterly irrational things. You're like, oh God, could we not have been designed with just a little bit more empathy for the mother?
Yes.
But I know fathers go through that too.
Yeah.
It's so overwhelming, but it is worth it.
Worth it. So worth it. I mean, you spoke earlier about being in a winter phase of your career, and yet I suppose you are, without sounding too cliched, but you are in that wonderfully blossoming phase of your life where you're embracing motherhood and just loving it. And then, of course, after winter comes spring. And so the time will come when you can get back into the work stuff if you want to.
Yeah. No, I'm excited about a project I'm doing when I go back.
Yeah.
But the producer is super mindful and accommodating.
Oh, great.
In terms of the working it around me and not being giant days every day. So that's incredible.
Yeah. That's
and I think
great.
COVID taught a lot of people about work-life balance, hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah.
That you can do things in a different way and you don't have to be chained to the desk.
Big time.
There are other ways of doing it.
Mm. Before I let you go, you spoke so beautifully about your mother. She's very wise. And now that you're a mother yourself, I'm sure you'd give your kids lots of advice. And right now, at 3 and 2, what are they going to take in? But what advice do you think you would impart, taking into account all your life experience so far and all of the ups and downs that you've experienced? Because certainly choosing the kind of work that you do, you take a lot of body punches, more than a lot of other professions do. So you've probably, as you already mentioned as well, you've done a lot of kind of work on yourself, and it certainly strengthens your own sense of self when you're in a career that can be quite changeable. So what would you say to your kids, do you think?
What would I say to my children? Well, I'm terrified of the hold of social media and where that's going. So I think my advice to them would be similar to my parents' advice to me about knowing who they are and listening to their own instincts and not being too swayed by trying to do what other people expect of them. I think would be something, including me. I might have, that was a wonderful book, I think it was, I read before having Rowan, about you have ideas about what you want for your children or who they're going to be, but really you're a conduit for this person who's arriving, and they may not like any of the things you're interested in or share any of your belief systems. They're an entity unto themselves. So you have to stand back and let them self-actualize, whatever way that'll be, but you hopefully will nurture and guide them and support them in whatever that's going to be, but not preconditioning them. And that's something definitely my parents never did with Olivia or I. They gave us so much exposure to so many different things to see where we were drawn and allowed us to do that. So that's something that I hope to impart to them.
Yeah.
And optimism above all. I think entering, you know, going through life with optimism is so important. And so, like, I keep harping on about social media, but I'm really unplugged from a lot of that.
Yeah.
And a lot of things that feed a lot of negativity, I think that really brings your own vibration way down.
Yes. And I think you do become ultra aware of it, don't you? When you do have smallies, that you do want to protect them from it. And we didn't have any of this stuff when we were kids.
No.
Yeah.
No. It's like overhearing things being said in the toilets at school, only everyone's reading it. Do you know what I mean? That kind of thing. Yeah. And also now, like, how teenagers communicate, they're all sitting beside each other on their phones and they're not with each other.
Yeah.
Like, that really terrifies me. Mm. Like, proper terrifies me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'd love to know how to guide them through that.
Before I let you go, what do you love most about being home? Like, what's the best bit about being back in Dublin?
Well, number one is family, 100%.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Being with my family, like, it's just gorgeous seeing the children running around with our parents and my sister and her husband and children and our friends. But I'm also very aware that we kind of have a perfect scenario, because when I meet up with friends, I get everybody together and they're like, we haven't seen anyone since the last time you were here.
Okay, yeah.
Everyone's busy. Everyone's lives are so nonstop.
Mm.
So I, you know, that kind of emerald glasses that you'd have on. I'm aware that when we're home, it's different than when we're not. So that helps me goodbyes.
Yeah, okay.
So that's the number one thing. I love being home. I love just plugging into the Irishness of home, the air, like the beauty. I love feeling like I'm in a country where you can get pure food. I mean, you can get amazing organic. I go to the farmer's market and all of that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I feel like we've got this little island that is like virgin pure in so many ways in terms of the access to dairy and food production and everything. And it's really a jewel.
Mm.
And the scenery and all of that is so pure. That I love that. Like, normally in the summer we try to get down to the west of Ireland and it's just such a tonic.
Yeah.
So this time it's been like walks in the country when we can get out anywhere. Like, I was in, a friend of mine converted a horse box into a little shebeen.
Oh, cool.
There, we're down Blessington, Wicklow with him, and just I love, like, you're minutes from Dublin, but you're in like this absolute paradise of sheep in the fields and everything, and like LA is just such a metropolis.
Yeah.
So that's something I really miss.
Yeah.
For sure. It's a very special country, and I do think you need to be away from it to fully appreciate that.
A massive thanks to Caroline for taking time to speak to me. I absolutely loved our chat. And if you liked it, please share it with your friends or family, or you can pop it up on your social media. And of course, you can support what I do in all the usual ways by clicking follow, giving a rating, or taking a minute to leave a comment. Thank you so much. You've been listening to Ready to Be Real.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.